Good evening. It's Tuesday, January 8th. This is Rabbi Feldman's shiur, and tonight's shiur is sponsored by Susan and Shalom Fish, exclusive Refuah Shleima for Yosef Shmuel ben Miriam.
Okay, good evening. I'd like to continue a little bit our theme of chesed-related mitzvot, and look a little bit at what might in some ways be the primary chesed, and that is the chesed of Hachnashus Kala, Simchas Chasen, as we'll discuss the various connections, various differences. And this is a very early chesed. The Midrashim tell us and the Gemaras tell us that this is something that Kadosh Baruch Hu did for Adam and Chava and Gan Eden, and therefore it certainly ranks together with all these other chasadim that we have that again Kadosh Baruch Hu had modeled directly, such as Bikur Cholim, such as Nicham Avelim, such as Hachnas Zorchim perhaps, Kuras Meshim, etc., etc. And certainly within the broader rubric that we've been talking about of Halachta B'drachav, and therefore presumably creating again a mitzvah d'oraisa. As with all of these mitzvahs, again, there's always a little bit of a discussion, it sounds like, from the Rambam, these individual categories and the Divrei Sofrim. Many Rishonim understood this to be a mitzvah min ha-Torah, and it's certainly explicitly included within the imperative of chesed that the Rambam lists examples of in Mishneh Torah. And even if it's not d'oraisa, that's certainly, again, a very ancient practice, and the idea of Sheva Brachos is generally assumed to be a takana of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's how it sounds like from the Gemara, so even if you don't call that Min HaTorah, as a Bach in Hilchos Kriyas HaTorah, it sounds like that's even called Min HaTorah. We generally assume that's not called Min HaTorah, that's called very ancient takana de Rabbanan. Moshe Rabbeinu was both the conveyor of the Torah and the rabbi, so if he made up something, that's the Rabbanan. So that's probably the Rabbanah, but that's again a very ancient takana, which is reflecting presumably this mitzvah HaTorah of Hachnasas Kala. And it sounds like from the Rambam's, Yaakov Rosenthal points out in his Mishnas Yaakov, that the phrase comes up really in three different contexts, which makes it presumably a three-part mitzvah. And we find it in Mishnah Torah in at least three places. We find it on the one hand in the context of Hilchos Brachos, because it refers to the mitzvah of Sheva Brachos as a facet of this. We find it in Hilchos Ishus, because it's something that pertains to the obligation of a husband to his wife. And we find it also in the laws of Chesed. We find it also having a role in that category. And here also, within Chesed, it may also have two distinct halves, as we'll discuss. So what exactly is going on here when we talk about this chesed? It's a little bit of an unusual type of chesed because it doesn't really fit neatly in all the other categories. My mother always comments that, you know, we give gifts to people who are getting married. Maybe we should give gifts to everyone who's not getting married. The people who are getting married are happy enough. Why do they need the gift? Everyone else needs the gift. So that's part of what strikes us as a little bit odd about this particular chesed. To the other categories that we have, we're dealing with somebody who's sick, we're dealing with somebody who's poor, somebody who needs a meal, somebody who, Rahman Aslan, lost a relative. So all of that, somebody's needy, somebody's wanting, somebody's disadvantaged. Here it's the people who are in the luckiest position, the people who should be the happiest people. So they're the people who we have to make them happy when they're already happy. So what exactly is that about? So that's a little bit of a surprising topic, which needs a little bit of explanation. So Bachar Wasserman has a comment about this, which some latest forum disagreed with, where he commented on the well-known Gemara, I think we talked about, I'm sure talked about in the past, I remember how recently, talked about the idea of Shekhar Mipnei HaShalom, you can lie because of the sake of peace. So the most famous source about that, perhaps, is the Gemara in the second parak of Ksubas, where the Gemara says, Keso Merakim Lifnei HaKala. What do you say when you dance in front of the Kala? And the Gemara tells us, really two opinions, we only quote one of them, Kala Nava Chasuda, we say she's a beautiful bride. So that issue aside of what we actually say, but the whole idea of Keso Merakim Lifnei HaKala, so that seems to suggest that the idea is to gladden the Kala, is to make the Kala happy. Is that really what it's about? So Bachana writes in his Haris Tiksubis, in his Kovetz Yurim, says, wait a minute, but presumably, if the idea here is a person is fulfilling a mitzvah, so they want to support them, so is he really performing a mitzvah here? So he has it's a technical discussion which he doesn't get into, he just alludes to, but it happens to be, first of all, is it a mitzvah of getting married? So that's Machlokas Rishonim. And it's a view of the Rambam and the Sefer Achinuch, who is that there is a mitzvah to get married, and the Rush seems to disagree. The Rush seems to understand, the Rush in his commentary to Ksubas on the Sugya of Bechus Erison, actually in Bav Zayin, where he suggests that really mitzvah of the getting married is really what we call a hechsher mitzvah. It's really a preparation for a mitzvah, because the mitzvah is really puravu. Mitzvah is really starting a family. So a lot of Rishonim disagree, and part of the mitzvah to get married also. The question is, either way, if you say it's mitzvah puravu or mitzvah getting married, who's obligated in the mitzvah? So it was discussed in both mitzvahs. When it comes to puravu, so the Gemara seems to clearly say that really it's only the man who's obligated. Why should that be? The woman's got to do all the work. That's the reason. Since the woman's got to do all the work, we can't say that's an obligation for a woman to go through childbirth. It's an obligation on the man, and obviously he's going to need a woman who's going to cooperate. But he's the one who's chayav to do it. He's the one who's obligated to do it. And when it comes to marriage, if you say that it's a mitzvah of marriage, so does that apply equally to men and to women? So the Gemara, it sounds like they do, because the Gemara says about mitzvah vayosim b'shlucho, which talks about in the context of marriage. The Gemara says that even though it's possible to get married to a shliach, better that you shouldn't do it that way, you should do it directly. Mitzvah bo yosim b'shlucho. So there the Gemara says on the other half also, mitzvah bo yosim b'shlucho, that a woman should also preferably get married directly rather than hire a stand-in to accept the ring for her. So it sounds like mitzvah on both of them. There's a whole discussion over there in the round, in the beginning of the second part of the Kiddushin, who has the obligation, is like you're saying, whatever it is. So there, Bachani assumes in his commentary here that the mitzvah is a mitzvah on the man, so why does it say, Kesem Rakta Musnei Hakala? And why does the Gemara talk about Simchas Kala? Why is it about making her happy if he's the one who has the mitzvah? So he says that maybe the idea is that his Kesem Rakta Musnei Hakala is to support him in his decision. He has to know that he's got a great Kala. So therefore we have to dance in front of her so that she'll see what's going on and that he'll appreciate him more. So there's certainly an element of that, but the other Svarim didn't accept this thesis exactly. Because first of all, why are we assuming that this is about a mitzvah? What is the idea of being Samech is necessarily because of a mitzvah? A lot of mitzvahs that we have, we don't necessarily throw a party for everyone who does a mitzvah. We discussed last week that there is an idea sometimes of standing up for people who do mitzvahs. That's why, according to one opinion, that's why we stand up for the people escorting the mace at a funeral, because they're involved in a mitzvah. And that some suggest, that's why, I think we did mention this a little bit, it's been discussed, that's why you stand up for a chassan, because he's performing a mitzvah. But the idea of that we have to adopt to celebrate this mitzvah, why should that necessarily be the case? So others suggest that really that's not what's going on. It's not about that. But it's about something else, and it's about something that reflects the fact that this is perhaps a primary chesed. And if we look to, and this really makes it more thematic and representative than other types of chesed, but if you look in the Sheva Brachos is really a very interesting study if you read them. So there is a pattern there. So look at the second bracha, right? So we'll start counting from Shar Kol Bar Lechvo, though we'll count Bar Kardafin at the end, like benching Sheva Brachas as opposed to Chuppah Sheva Brachas. So the second bracha is Yotzer HaAdam. Right, what do you say? Thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for creating man. For putting people on this earth. That's it. So what does that got to do with anything? So apparently what we're saying here is, thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for doing the ultimate chesed, for giving us life, for giving us the opportunity to enjoy the world and to live off it and to earn a chelek in Olam Haba, which is the ultimate chesed that can ever be. So thank you for creating us and giving us these opportunities. Then we go on to say, there's an essay about this, the Mashiach in Slobodka. It was Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Sher, so they printed his Sichas Musar, a paper called Leket Sichas Musar, so he recently printed a third volume. So the third volume is a whole essay about this, where he makes a lot of these points. And where he notes that, then you move on from there to, we say the bracha is more expansive, and it talks about Kadosh Baruch Hu Asher Yotzer Es Adam B'Tzalmo 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 goes on to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created humanity and then created from within him the opportunity to build a binyan adayah, to build a household forever. So we expand the bracha of Yotzer Adam, and then we end with, again, Yotzer Adam. We say, first the Kadosh Baruch Hu was created, that was a tremendous chesed. And then he went on to create a whole new level of experience, a whole new level of joy, that it could be a family life, that the person could meet his soulmate, and that there could be everything that could come out of that. So this whole new level of creation, this whole new level of chesed, the chesed that goes beyond the initial chesed of Kadosh Baruch Hu who's creating us, so that's what's celebrated in this third bracha, and that's what we're making reference to as a theme of the Nisuin. It's interesting the halakhic relationship between this third bracha, and the second bracha is a whole discussion, because it's unusual. Apparently this happens far more often than you think. So we have the second bracha, the third bracha, we say Yotzer HaAdam, and then the fourth bracha, the Chuppah, is this longer bracha, Vashi Yotzer HaAdam, and again Yotzer HaAdam. So the impression that you have is that this fourth bracha really includes the third bracha. So if that's the case, so what should the din be if somebody messes up, which apparently happens far more often than you think, because it's discussed in a lot of tshuvas, or Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about this, or Pesach Frank has a tshuva about this, and we've heard of incidents like this, and discussed about this also in the Sefer Nefesh. Apparently it happens a lot, that somebody gets up there to make a bracha under the chuppah, and instead of reciting the third bracha, Yetzer Adam, they say the fourth bracha, Yetzer Adam, Mitzalma. So maybe we should say that we know in Hilchos Berachos Hananim that Shahakol, for example, was a more inclusive bracha than other brachas. So that's why you're supposed to make, Baruch HaDama before a Shahakol, because the Shahakol includes the Baruch HaDama. So if you make the Shahakol first, presumably you're not supposed to make the other bracha afterwards, because the Shahakol includes it. So once you make the fourth bracha before the third bracha, if you say it's Asher Yetzer HaAdam before Yetzer HaAdam, so can you still recite the third bracha? That's a whole discussion in Poskim. Maybe we should say it's inclusive. And in Nefesh HaRav, the Shafter quotes the story that that was told, Basic was asked this once, and he allowed the third bracha to be recited. And I think there he includes the discussion that even though it was mentioned to him that maybe he should say that the third bracha was included in the fourth bracha, so he thought that it was a covered abrius issue, because you're honoring people under the chuppah, and somebody's going to get left out now. Somebody's going to be embarrassed. And I think your scribes are sitting there, that everybody was lined up, ready to go take their bracha, and if somebody gets left out, it's going to be a big bizarion. I was at this first time I ever saw this. Two nights ago, I was at a wedding where they give out the programs for what's going to happen, and they listed in the program everybody who's getting a bracha. So this would have been embarrassing if somebody got left it out. Somebody got left out because there was a switch. So it would have been embarrassing. So she said, because of the covered abrius issue, he's not going to worry about the possibility that the fourth bracha might include the third bracha, and allowed to be said. So it's a whole discussion of posting whether this is a problem or not. But it's interesting, thematically, it really seems a little bit the reverse, that maybe the third bracha is including more than the fourth bracha. The third bracha is talking about all of creation, and then the fourth bracha is more specific about these higher levels of creation. So what then emerges as the theme is that this topic and this event is really commemorative of all the chesed in the world, the fact that Kadosh Baruch Hu created us as instruments and agents of chesed, and therefore we take this opportunity, which symbolizes the whole thing in its most intense form, to celebrate that and to try to evoke that initial chesed of Adam HaRishon. And that's why the sixth bracha, I believe, says Kesamechecha Yitzircha B'gan Eden Mekedem. We look for that mood, for that atmosphere of the rejoicing of Adam and Chava at that time. So that's apparently the focus. That this chesed is both practical, and we'll discuss that a little bit more. It has a practical element that we already mentioned of supporting the couple. They should feel that they're making the right decision. They should feel happy about what they're doing. And also, thematically, they represent the whole endeavor of chesed, and therefore it's something that we have to show as much excitement towards as we can because of the imagery that's contained within it. And then it gets even more specific because it was the Dvar Moshe on Maseches Ksuvah was written by Rav Moshe Rosmarin as a commentary on the Gemara. So as he points out, but we see that if it was just he was supposed to be very happy, he should let them be very happy. Why do we talk about the case of Meraktim? Why do we talk about certain things to say? Why don't we just celebrate with whatever makes you happy? So he suggests that apparently you see that the nature of the celebration is that, again, we try to be specific about it, and that we want that the couple should not just be in a good mood, but they should be specifically happy that they are getting this spouse, that they're getting their husband, getting this wife, wife's getting this husband, and therefore it's not just that we make them happy, but we do things that try to focus their attention on the Messiah, so to speak, focus their attention on how lucky they are for this particular shidduch, and that's also apparently a key component of what's going on. And therefore, that's this idea of specificity. You also find in the Shafa Brachas, because the idea that 12 different words that you see, Ashibar Asas, and Simcha, Chas, Makal, Gila, Rin, all those different words. So here again, the Bracha is conveying that it's not just that we're happy, but that we appreciate nuances and levels of happiness. And that's part of what we're trying to commemorate this event. And therefore, we want it to be specific. We want the Chas and Makal to know that they're very lucky to have each other. So that's apparently all part of what's going on. And in that context, so we have this obligation of Simcha, and apparently the obligation is on the crowd to make them happy, but it's also on the participants themselves. As Yosef Engel points out in his commentary to the Gemara and his Bilyon HaYashas, that there's an obligation on the Chasan also, because we compare it to Yantif. On Yantif, we have an obligation to be happy, and that means the people experiencing Yantif have to take responsibility to make themselves happy. So too, the people getting married have an obligation to make themselves happy and to make each other happy, as the Klausenberger Rebbe discusses in his Chuvos in a different Yantif, that he has an obligation upon the husband to make sure the wife is having a good time, and there's an obligation on each one of them to make sure that they are enjoying themselves, as we would see by Simchas Yantif. Everyone's responsible for their own happiness, and so too, the whole crowd is responsible to make them happy as well. So we say the whole crowd, so what does the whole crowd mean? So that's a complicated topic, because here this is something where we find that apparently a large crowd is demanded. We find that this is grouped together with Havaya Shamesh, as we discussed last week. As different as these two things are, these are two areas in which there seems to be an element of being Levatal Torah, as the Mishnah says, to just take priority over Talmud Torah. A lot of unresolved points within that statement. We say that in Levatal Torah for Hachnasas Kala, so first of all, there is a Machlokas in the Rishonim already, and Machlokas later on. It doesn't seem to be resolved. Does this mean that Stama person is in Levatal Torah, or does it mean that even, let's say, somebody says Rasa Manasa, somebody is really involved all the time? So there are those who say, no, it just means the average person. And there are those who say the other extreme, it means even the Gadol Ador, everybody has to take upon themselves the Achrayas for Hachnasas Kala. It's a question also specifically to talk about Yeshiva Bachram, who have perhaps a more standard schedule of learning, and they have a chasen every night. So the discussion of how to balance this, not so easy. Different yeshivas made different rules how to deal with this. Rav Osner has a number of shuvas discussing how you balance this. It's not a simple question. And then the question then becomes also, so how many people need to be there? Is this an idea, do we compare it again to Havayas HaMeis, where we talk about huge numbers? Do we say that whatever is in keeping with the standard or the status of the individuals involved, or do we say that it's supposed to be as many as you can possibly get? Because again, in keeping with the idea before that we're trying to make the couple happy that they're getting each other, so the more people who show up to celebrate this, apparently the bigger impact it's going to have. So what exactly are we talking about? So there it's also not clear. So there you find that some who say that the Paschim, that should be everybody, the whole world, and again, Rav Osner talks about that, and it's truly said, it sounds like that from most of the sources, but it can't be, so it's got to be that we could prove otherwise. A whole discussion back and forth, it's not exactly resolved how the Paschim on that front. And one way in which it also impacts our practical observance, in the Yeshuas Yaakov, the commentary in the Shulchan Aruch, the Yeshuas Yaakov writes that if you have a chasen in the ear anywhere in the city, so then none of the minyanim say tachman, even if the chasen is not davening it. And he says this is because everyone's obligated in Hachnasas Kala, so presumably they're all gone. And even if they're not going, they should be going. So therefore, none of the minyanim in town should be saying tachman. And the Minchatir Revi, and the Sefer Nemuki Arachayim takes issue with that, and he says, what are you talking about? Everyone's got to come. He says, that's not how we're talking. He doesn't think that that's true. He says, the people who are irrelevant, the people who are shy should be going, and the people who have nothing to do with the couple are not going to be going. And if the chasen is not there, there's no reason to be mevatel tachan. And he's coming from a chassidish point of view, and normally the chassidim cancel tachan pretty often. So he doesn't say that, but he does write in his principles there, he says that even those who are very makel and getting rid of tachan, he says, don't think we would agree with that. You have to have the chasen actually there at the time. So that's a reflection a little bit of this unresolved question. Is this an obligation on everybody in the city, or is this more an obligation on the people who are shy to the couple? So that's a part of a discussion. This really touches upon the larger issue of attending simchas in general, that we find the Shach points out in his commentary to Sulchan Aruch that attending simchas in itself, whatever it is, whether it's a wedding or a bris or a siyum or a bar mitzvah, or whatever it is, that in itself is a key aspect of chesed. That's certainly a mitzvah of chesed, the way he understands it. And we also find the Gemara in Sachem talks very negatively about somebody who doesn't want to participate in a Suda's mitzvah. So even so, there's got to be some limits. Doesn't mean that you got to fly to China every time, you know, you're not going to be able to have a life. So the commentators assume that if you can't go because it costs too much, or it's going to take you a month to get there, so, you know, that's not called somebody who's uninterested in the Suda's mitzvah. If it's reasonable, if it's something that you can go and you're shy to the people, and you're going to be able to have an impact on them, so that's a different story. So everything depends a little bit. There's two components here. There's a component of the Suda's mitzvah, which itself is supposed to be a spiritually edifying experience that you're not supposed to decide to spurn. But again, that depends on are you spurning it, or it's just not really reasonable for you to go. It's going to cost you $1 million and take you 30 hours on a plane. So that's not called not being interested in the Suda's mitzvah. But in addition to that, there is the component of chesed. So that's, again, a sliding scale. So it depends to what extent you're going to have an impact on the couple, and to what extent you're going to be able to participate and create some. And here you find a lot of nuances and a lot of differences depending on who you are and what your relationship is to them, and also what exactly we're talking about. For example, when it comes to Hachnasas Kala itself, so there we find certain differences, and many Achronim suggest, and there was an essay about this that was written by the Kesher Ephraim. His name was the Ephraim Church, who was one of the, I think, one of the advisors to the Israeli chief rabbinate in the early days of the state. So as he explains, and as others point out also, that there really are two different mitzvahs here. So on the one hand, there is this idea of simchas chasen, that you want to make the chasen happy, which is important, but maybe is more limited. And then there's the idea of hachnasas kala. Hachnasas kala, we find the phrase is used differently in different contexts. Hachnasas kala refers to the fact that the kala herself has a certain amount of discomfort. She's being taken out of her father's household and being brought into a new household. And who knows what it's going to be like, and she's not going to be able to necessarily control the circumstances, and there's a certain amount of anxiety. And therefore, whatever we can do to try to make that transition as joyous as possible, and to try to ease that anxiety, that's all a mitzvah in itself, and that's an even greater mitzvah, and that has perhaps a greater standard as far as compelling attendance. So that's the previous part, the getting to the chuppah, the hafnashos kala, that's a different stage. We talk about hafnashos kala, so that apparently has a requirement of levaya, of escorting her, and you find that the earlier sources talk about literally walking with her to the chuppah, which we don't find so much today. Talk about taking her for her father's house and escorting her all the way to the chuppah, and that we certainly don't find. So the whole discussion is that something that should happen or shouldn't happen. So they say that it does happen that the women do it and her friends do it, and therefore it's not necessarily a setting for the whole community to be involved with, but that aspect happens. And then everything, again, in keeping with its degree. And that's where we find a little bit of confusion. In the Shulchan Aruch it says that there's a big mitzvah to go be Mesameach Chasan and Kala. And the Beis Shmuel on the side of the page of Shulchan Aruch says he has a mitzvah to go there and be mishameach them. So I'm finding that even people who aren't there have to go there in order to try to be mishameach them. And in the Drisha, the commentary on the Torah, so it sounds a little different. It doesn't sound like it's necessarily a mitzvah to go there and be mishameach them, but that if you're there, you have to be mishameach them. And this is in keeping with the Gemara that says Dwarim Asachas Brachas and Davav Manala, for the Gemara there says that Kohanene Misudas Chasan V'Eina Masamcho over Mishim Heikolos, that whoever enjoys the Suda of a Chasan and doesn't make him happy, doesn't rejoice him, so he's in violation of five kolos. Let's discuss a little bit what that means. It's a little bit of a funny language. But the Kol Chasan, Kol Shimcha, Kol Chasan, Kol Kala, the Gemara quotes out, counts up all those kolos, all those voices, as whoever enjoys this Suda and doesn't make him happy, so that he's missing out on something. It's like missing out on five kolos. So it sounds like from the way the Drisha phrase it emphasized in that Gemara, that it means if you're there, you're not partaking in simple stuff in the college there, but not necessarily you have to go. So again, here the Kesser Ephraim says that they're both true. Now, that there's certainly an obligation on the people who were there to try to participate as much as possible in making them happy. And people who aren't there also, if they can go, they should go. That's also a mitzvah, but it's also going to be dependent a little bit on the circumstances, and it's not going to be as blatant, and it's not going to be as criticized as somebody who's there and doesn't take the opportunity to be misameach. So that's also a little bit what you find in that discussion as far as this sliding scale. And so here it depends on how close people are and to what extent they're going to offend them if they're not going to show up. And as somebody points out, some contemporary scholar points out, that here also not everybody is always reasonable. People have different types of attitudes, but that doesn't necessarily let you off the hook. I mean, it lets you off the hook depending on what type of investment you need to make, but factoring in people's not so reasonableness is also a part of the discussion, because you know, the Gemara says, that the Torah says rather, that when we talk about giving staka, so we give staka in accordance with their machzor, in accordance with what they are missing, and that means that even if they have unreasonable needs, so we try to fill their reasonable needs. So it's not only true in terms of money, it's true in terms of chesed as a whole, that if people need something, it's may not necessarily be the same kind of things everyone else needs, still that's considered to be de machzor. And if you feel that people are going to be offended, even if it's not so reasonable, that's also included in the cheshbon of what to do. Even if that's not the only factor, but that's also included in the factor. And so again, it's going to depend on where you are. It's an interesting kind of chazanish is quoted as saying this depends really on local custom and how many people generally come, what types of people generally come is all going to be different types of nuances. And Rav Shlomo Zalman is quoted as having said that he made an interesting trade-off in his life, that when he was young, so he didn't go to so many weddings, and because he didn't go to so many weddings, so he became Rav Shlomo Zalman, and therefore when he was grown up and when he was Rav Shlomo Zalman, the times he did go to weddings, it was a much bigger deal. The people were much happier to see him. He had a much bigger impact because he spent his youth learning. So therefore, that's also a quantity-quality trade-off there, that we want people to be able to invest in learning also. It's an interesting way to put it. But there is also the fact that people who make a bigger impact by being there can get away with less, and that's also it's also a discussion. So you find when we talk about what is the mitzvah of simcha, when we talk about going to a wedding and being a sameach, what's considered being a sameach, you find different things, and there's some who say for some people just being there is enough, and for some people it's more. For some people, it's quoted in the Ezer Mikodesh, if you make a bracha under the chuppah, that's also considered to be a special contribution to simcha. And then there is the dancing, and there is the words. So the Gemara says, Kesa Meraktim, so what do you say? So the idea of the words apparently is a big focus. And as the Marsha points out, that's also what the Gemara seems to be getting at. First of all, the Gemara says that the reward of a chasana is mili, is in the words. So that's already the Gemara right before this Gemara about Hey Kolos. That already kind of calls our attention to the fact that what you say is a big component. And the Kid Eger writes in his Rishva Chiddush, the Bracha, that everybody's different. A Talmid Chacham can say a big Dvar Torah, a person who's a little bit of a clown can make a clown appearance, can make them laugh that way, and other people can say nice words of praise, whatever it is, each according to their personality. There's an interesting interpretation in the Snichas Chacham, the commentary on the Shachas Brachas, where he suggests a very novel interpretation. So what does this Gemara mean, this idea of Kornanya, Mishudas Chasen, Over Mishum, Hey Kolos, the whole language is all very unusual. So he suggests like this, he says, talking to a Talmid Chacham, the Talmid Chacham normally, when he has a meal, so the Mishnah says the Pirkei Avos, that a Talmid Chacham who sits together with another Talmid Chacham and has a meal, they have to be talking and learning. That's an obligation of the meal. So you think, okay, all these Talmid Chacham are gathered together at the wedding, so they should be talking and learning. So if they're going to talk and learning, they're not going to necessarily be involved with the wedding. They're going to say, well, I'm also the Torah, maybe I don't have to do it. And that was the whole discussion. So that's why the Gemara says, no, but there's five kolos connected chanisha chumshay Torah. You should know that the Mishameh Chasim Rekala is equal to value of learning, and therefore that's why the strange phrasing that those who are benefiting from the suda and think therefore I should be learning because I'm in the middle of a suda, so I can't be doing the simchas chasen and kala. You should know that the simchas chasen and kala is worth just as much, and you're passing up this opportunity over. You're passing up these chamisha kolos, and that's just as important, and that's the priority here. So it really depends. So that's either it's going to be divrei Torah or it's going to be whatever types of words it is, everything's going to be each person in keeping with his stature. That's apparently what's called for. Everything within its own place. And there's a whole discussion. Chavis Yair has a discussion: is it appropriate for a Talmud Chacham to be the? He talks about being the musician, and as later Sfarim points out, that apparently being a musician for pay at that time was a less dignified type of position. So is that a problem? So he assumes that it's not, but that's appropriate. And in general, you find more latitude for what type of behavior is appropriate within limits. There are some discussions, even the Gemara itself raises discussion, that maybe you can go too far. And there are certain concerns that Post can point out. First of all, to point out that you have to be careful not to get drunk and lose control, because that could create all kinds of problems. To really lose decorum, and here it's a little bit subjective, so it gets a little complicated. To really lose decorum is a problem as well, Post can talk about. And they also talk about that you have to be careful about the neighborhood, that if it gets late at night, if it's after 11 o'clock, and Post can talk about 11 o'clock, we'll go to sleep. If you're in, say, the Sheva Brachas, and you're in an apartment building, so then there's other issues that contemporary Post can talk about. If the Shilas, you can make the Sheva Brachas at that point, there's a mitzvah of Yaveir, so you're going to be waking up the neighbors at the same time. So that's a complicated discussion, and Hilchos Shcheinim has to be considered. What exactly are the understandings, and what exactly are the conventions? But that's all part of this discussion that has to be considered as far as this is concerned as well. There is also the implication that you get from the Gemara that not only is there an idea of Simchas Chasen and Kala, but there's also a mitzvah of Kavod Chasen and Kala, because the Gemara talks about Mavirin Esameis Mishum Kala, that if there's a caravan, if there's a, on the one hand there's a funeral procession, on the other hand a wedding procession, and they're both coming at the same time, so the funeral procession waits for the wedding procession. So that seems to suggest that that's the priority, because there's a mitzvah of Kavod to the Kala, and that's as the Ramban writes, the Kavod HaChai wins out over the Kavod HaMeis. The honor given to the living person is more important than the honor given to the deceased. As we discussed in the past, the idea of Kavod HaMeis, and very often, as the Shefta points out often, is that people believe that Kavod HaMeis is a concept that starts when a person dies. As long as they're alive, you can treat them terribly. But once they die, then all of a sudden, now it's Kavod HaMeis, you have to treat them nicely. Not the way it works, and Kavod HaBrias is true all the time. And the Chiddush is that even after they're no longer alive and they don't realize what's going on, there's still an obligation of Kavod. But it starts from the fact that we have to treat them Kavod when they're alive. So in general, there's a priority to the Kavod Achai, and therefore maybe that's what the Gemara is reflecting, that there is a Chiyuv Kavod to the Kala as well, Alts Kala, this whole idea that we have of Chasen Domo Lamela, Kala, is part of that equation also. So there is someone who understands from here that's what the Gemara is saying, that there is an obligation of Kavod. Now there are others who thought that maybe that's not really worth saying, that Kavod in and of itself is not specifically an obligation here, but that the act of showing Kavod is going to enhance the Simcha, and therefore it's included in the midst of Simchas Chasen and Kala. So it's a discussion whether there is an independent obligation of Kavod or not. Some latest foreign point out it seems to be a debate among the Rishonim, but that's another possibility as well. And it led into another debate among the Rishonim, that the impression you would have from this Gemara is that in general, weddings take priority over funerals, that the needs of the wedding are going to come first. You have to do one or the other, so the wedding's going to come first, and that's how some Rishonim understood, the Ramban and the Shilpas and others, and the Rambam disagreed. The Rambam split the two dinim and said, yes, the dinim of the Gemara is true, that we give priority to the wedding procession, but in general, as far as what you do, not as far as showing cover, but as far as choosing one over the other, the needs of the mesh come first. That's a whole discussion of itself, discussed in the past in terms of weighing Nicham Avelim versus Bikur Cholim, etc., etc. So here this is a debate among the Rishonim, and there are different perspectives on this. But in any event, what comes out is that you have here a tremendously important mitzvah, and has a lot of ramifications, a lot of themes to it, and perhaps it really represents in a certain primary way really the whole concept of chesed and our celebration of that value in and of itself in a lot of very key and significant ways. So just to quickly review what we spoke about. So we spoke about the fact that we have the mitzvah of Hachnasas Kalos and Chasson, which goes back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself did this for Adam and Chava in Gan Eden, and therefore in the sense of Halacha B'drach of the obligatory, just like all the other midos that we have described from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And there are at least three contexts in which Hachnasas Kalos comes up in the Rambam, the mitzvah of Shevi Brachos, Din in Hilchos Brachos Amazon, a din of Baal Tiishto, he's got to make his wife happy, and the din of Chesed that we find towards the couple as a whole, which is combined with this separate component of Simchos Chesed. We talked about why is there a mitzvah to make happy people happier, and we talked about on the one hand the idea of supporting the Chesed in his mitzvah. Well, discussion, is it only his mitzvah, is it really about the mitzvah, etc., etc. And then we discussed that perhaps that could be a theme, but there seems to be a broader theme here as well, which is really explicit in Rashi and Ksuvus, by the way, I mentioned that. But, the idea is that the couple is receiving chesed from the crowd in a fulfillment of Halachta B'drachah, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu doing this to Adam and Chava, and that's the theme we see in the Brachos, who created man, and then who created man in this higher level of Simcha, and made them happy in Gan Eden, and that's what we remember. And then we discussed a little bit about the Halachta question of does the fourth Bracha include the third Bracha, or not, and it seems thematically to be the other way, but it creates a question of Halacha L'maaseh, if the Brachos get switched, can those two Brachos be recited out of order? And then we talked a little bit about why there's this idea specifically of using words in order to make them happy with each other, apparently is also the theme here. And we talked about the mitzvah of the Chassan himself, to make himself happy, like Yontif, like the Sengarit, and the mitzvah to make his wife happy. And we talked about the idea of Mevatlan Torah for this, the Machlokas Poskim, whether this applies to everybody, whether it applies to average people, etc., etc. And the question in general of what are the standards that are demanded at the wedding, how does it compare to the discussion of the Gemara about funerals? Is it just in keeping with whatever the status is, or is it as many as possible? Seems to be a little bit of an unresolved point. And then we talked about how that affects Hilchos Tachlin. Yeshua Yaakov says the whole town doesn't say Tachlin, and the Mekatchi Rebbe said he doesn't understand that. It's only the people who are Shaykh, doesn't apply to the whole town, and certainly not the Minyanim when the Chassan is not there. And then we talked a little bit about the mitzvah of Levaya by Eikala, and how it's a question whether that's fulfilled nowadays, maybe it should be fulfilled, and the assumption that it is. And then again, the question of who's obligated to come, and the fact that the Shulchan Aruch says a big mitzvah to go, the Beis Shmuel says that the mitzvah to go, even if you're not there, to go and to be mishameach, and it sounds like in the priest maybe not that way, just that there's a criticism of Gemara on people who are there are not mishameach, Hashem and Kala, and as the Kasher Fine explains, really it's both. The criticism on especially people who are there are not listening to math was also a mitzvah to go. And we talked a little bit about the general chesed of the Shach points out of participating in a simcha, so the simcha in general, and the Gemara's criticism of those who are not interested in this mitzvah and how that's something that's factored in terms of different types of priorities. And then we talked about the difference between Hachnasas Kala and Simchas Chasson, that there is a mitzvah to make them happy. There's also a mitzvah to make the transition for the Kala into as joyous an experience as possible. And it could be that that mitzvah has a greater demand than the mitzvah of Simchas Chasson. And then we talked about other components of who's obligated in this and different levels of obligation. We talked about even if people are going to be unreasonably offended, that's also factored into the equation. We talked about Chazon Ish's assumption that it all depends on Minhag HaMakom, and about Rav Shlomo Zalman's comment that he traded off by learning in his youth. It was more of a cover when he came in his adulthood. And Rav Akiva Eger's comment that everybody's different, so a Talmid Chacham was able to give Divrei Torah, and somebody who's not is able to do other things, and how it's all fits into the whole discussion. I mentioned the Smichas Chachamim's whole board about the Gemara in Brachas about Kol Nedim and Mitzvah Chasson, and how there's a creative interpretation of what that means. And then we talked a little bit about the different considerations about whether decorum is as much of a priority as other times, a little bit of a debate in Poskim about that, about the concern not to get too drunk, about the concern not to disturb the neighbors, how all of that is mentioned in Poskim. And then we talked about also the concern whether there's a question of kavod for the kala, the Gemara that says it would give priority to a wedding procession over a funeral procession. does that mean that there is in general an obligation of kavod for the chasan and kala? That was machlokes that we showed him. Do we perhaps say that it's just a way of making them happy? And then the question in general of whether a chasan and kala have priority over a funeral in other ways. We choose to go to that before a funeral. That was also a debate in the Shonim in interpretation of this Gemara. We'll just end with one more word that Bukhanan also commenting on the Gemara in Brachas. He has another discussion, this idea of Kalanenim as Siddhas Chasins. So what exactly does that mean to convey? So he suggests there were two interpretations. One interpretation is that maybe it's a type of Gezela, that here the Chasin is paying for the Suga. And if you're going to come, and he's assuming that you're going to mishmeach him, and instead you're just eating and leaving, so maybe there's a type of gizela there. It's an interesting idea. There actually are some svarim who write, it's going to sound funny, but some svarim who write that that's why the minhag has developed that the kalev family should pay for the wedding, so that they shouldn't be at risk of violation called the end of a shudas chasdan. It won't be called a shudas chasdan, called a shudas kala. It's actually found in some svarim. And that's one interpretation that he has. The other interpretation there that he has is that it's the very nature of the suda that makes you a mishmeach, makes you required to be mishmeach. That the nature of partaking in the suda now makes you a bala simcha, makes you a part of the whole process. And therefore, because you're an enes, now you're obligated to be mishmeach, and now that all becomes part of the process, which again reflects the whole mutually synergistic nature of this type of chesed specifically, that it's both an expression of chesed and a celebration of chesed and a representation of chesed, and therefore perhaps in that sense one of the primary chesedim that we have in a way a little bit different than all the rest. I think it's just about time for Marv. We'll stop there.